You're listening to The Perth Property Show, Australia's only weekly property podcast by West Australian experts for West Australian listeners. Catch your latest episode every Monday at 7 a.m.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Perth Property Show. My name's Trent Fleskins, your host. As always, this week we have Perth's number one valuer in the Golden Triangle. He knows everything about every one of these suburbs. He's my go-to man when I need to figure out what the hell things are worth in some of these very expensive parts of the world. It's Cameron Kane, valuer from CBRE. How are you going, mate?
Yeah, I'm well. Thanks for having me. I think I was here 2 years ago. It's been a while between drinks. A lot's changed since.
Well, why don't you give us a little bit of a executive summary, if you can, about your patch of the woods. What's been going on in the last couple of years in the GT?
That's a really good question, and one which is quite hard to explain in, I suppose, one sentence, because the market has been so diverse, and it really depends what we're talking about and which suburb, which property type. So as an example, Mosman Park is a really diverse suburb. There's just so many different property types. So if someone asks me, you know, what's the market doing in Mosman Park? Well, we can start at one end of Wellington Street at Stirling Highway, and you're dealing with a 40 square metre little studio apartment. That market's actually really, really strong. So you've got heaps of East Coast investors trying to buy those small apartments for high 200s.
Just looking for a yield.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got locals just wanting to get into the market and get into that suburb. Yep. And as we move east along Wellington Street, we move into the townhouse and villa type properties, and they're a really, really strong market. So again, you've got young professionals wanting to get into the western suburbs, and you've still got your investor market. So something like a $700,000-$800,000 townhouse will sell first weekend, four or five offers. So a really strong market. You know, we keep moving down Wellington Street towards the river. You get your freestanding $1.5 million cottage on 400 square meters. Again, a red hot market. I'd expect that type of product to sell first week, six, seven offers, 40 groups through. And as we move up into each price bracket, the market stabilizes. So I'd say even up to $2.5 to $3 million, it's a very, very good market. It's certainly not as strong as the lower end because of affordability.
Just less buyers in the pool.
Absolutely. So that market above 3 million, so 3 to 5 million, has been impacted the most by interest rates. You look at what your mortgage was at the start of 2020 when, you know, the cash rate was 0.1%, there's a big difference. So 13 interest rate rises later, mortgage repayments look a lot different.
Well, we're talking about a mortgage repayment there of probably about $15,000, whereas 4 years ago that was around $7,000-$8,000. So it really has changed the profile of people who are not probably interested in the properties that we're talking about at that price point, but have the ability to actually transact at that price.
Yeah, so I think what's happened is the market's been compressed. So your $3.5 million buyers now, probably your $3 million buyer, and your $3 million is your $2.5 million. So it's compressed down into those real affordable price brackets. And if I had to guess, I'd say that the most heated market in the whole of the western suburbs is your mid ones to high ones freestanding home. That is just such a strong market, because I think a lot of buyers who are in the twos have come down.
Yep.
And those in the ones are sort of saying, well, we're only probably getting a townhouse now for $1 million. So to get our dream house, which is only a small cottage, you've got to push into the mid ones. Really what's happened now is you cannot get a freestanding home for under $1 million in the western suburbs, where prior to the growth period, which started in 2020, you could get something under $1 million, which was freestanding.
Well, let's juxtaposition that against the rest of Perth, because obviously it's really interesting to talk about the western suburbs, and we'll detail those suburbs in this episode. But when we think about the story across the average house in Perth, the median house price, the everyman suburb across the suburban areas of Perth, we know that prices have gone up in the last 5 years about 50%. And in the last couple of years since we last spoke, we're talking about 25 to 30% across the board, and some suburbs 40, 60%. You think about the city of Armidale, properties across the board in the city of Armidale went up 30% last year, simply based on being in that affordability zone that Brendan Ptolemy was talking about a couple of weeks ago, where pretty much everyone in the market can afford that space between $400,000 and $800,000. Now, that's a smaller market in the western suburbs, but it's interesting to hear that in the same vein, those price points, if you can find properties in that price point, the flats, the townhouses, are just as popular. And it's really about characterizing then who else is left in the market as you go up in the price points, right?
Definitely. I suppose another way you can explain it is whatever the most affordable product is in each suburb is receiving the strongest demand. So even somewhere like Peppermint Grove, entry level is 3 to 4 million. And those homes have actually performed similarly to outlying areas. So in the last 6 to 12 months, they've actually done your sort of 20 to 25%. But as you jump up into the higher price brackets, it's a more stable market where you might be doing 5%. So it's still a really good market. It's just the more affordable, the stronger it is.
Simply because supply is tight everywhere, but it's just how many buyers are there at the negotiation table in the first couple of weeks that probably sends the price in a certain direction with a certain propensity. Let's start characterizing those suburbs when we're talking about the western suburbs. From east to west, I guess, is the easiest way for us to track it. Which suburbs are we specifically talking about when we're thinking about those that Cameron Kane drives around every day?
If we start off in Netherlands and we take a deep dive, and you might help me out here by comparing rates per square meter, and we can sort of get some context into what land's worth and why certain streets, you know, all days on markets. Yeah, absolutely. So if we just say stock standard, middle of the road, western suburbs is Netherlands, mostly quarter acres, all straight avenues, and a standard block's worth $2 million. So if we break that down, that's $2,000 a square meter. 5 years ago, it was about $1,400 to $1,500.
So you were paying low to mid ones, and now we're at $2 million for anything with a standard Californian bungalow on it.
Pretty much, yep, yep. And then as we move south into Dalkeith, which is a more prestigious suburb, again, it's a pretty simple formula. We're looking at, say, Searcy Circle, Viking, Menorah. They're 2.5 to high 2s for a quarter acre block. So suddenly your rate per square meter jumps from 2,000 to 2,500
to 3,000. So a 40% jump just simply by crossing over Princess.
Yeah, you are getting closer to the river, but the amenities are fairly similar. So it's definitely you're buying into a more prestigious suburb.
It's the name, isn't it, you're paying for? Because the quality of houses doesn't just jump the second you cross into Dalkeith. It sort of blends along as you get closer to the river.
And on those rates, they really ramp up as you creep closer and closer to the river. So once you get towards Jutland Parade, if you're, say, two streets back, your rate will start to go from 3,000 to 4,000. Once you start to get a river glimpse, you're probably at 5,000. And then when you're right on the river in Jutland Parade, you're probably around 6,000 to 7,000 a square metre, which is quite in line with other really prestigious addresses around the river. So if we jump into, say, the Esplanade Peppermint Grove.
This is where the big land developers live. Mining company executives. These are properties we're talking 15, 20, 30 million dollar houses, right?
For sure. There's a lot of, funnily enough, along the Esplanade, there's some very big names in the property industry. And you're right there, you're looking at up to 9,000 a square meter. So depending on what it is and the land area, we've got to be mindful that as the land area increases, the rate does diminish. When we move around the river, we go into Saunders Street, which is a bit like going into the Hollywood Hills. It feels like it probably should be a gated community. You know, you drive down there, Saunders Street and the Coombe, and
it's really only a couple of streets. There's no reason for you to be there unless you live there.
Yeah, that or it's full of tradies. The amount of construction going on there is crazy at the moment.
Unrelenting. There's always one mansion or two mansions being built on those streets, isn't there?
Yeah, and these are serious properties where they're taking 3 or 4 years to construct, and there's cranes, but unobstructed river views. You're looking at, you know, the latest sales evidence is showing 8,000 to 9,000 a square metre for Saunders Street. Again, as a broad rate.
You is know, this some sort of just land value here? Or
this is purely land value. But interesting what's happened, and I think the last time we spoke, even 2 years ago, we saw this evolving where the river and the coast have gone toe-to-toe in a sense, where in the 80s it was all about the river, and into the 2000s the coast started coming back. And if you look just on a rate per square metre, and we try and find where is the highest square meter in Perth, well, you've got to head to the coast. You go to Cottesloe. So if you were on entry level, again, on one of the thoroughfares, maybe Curtin Ave or closer to Stirling Highway, East Cottesloe, you're still looking at entry level 3,000 a square meter. And then as you jump into that midsection, which is still very prime, say your Marmion Street or Broome Street. So Marmion's probably 4,500 a square meter. Broome, as you're nudging close to the ocean, you're at 5,500 a square meter. And then after that,
it just gets silly, doesn't it?
It does get silly.
These numbers are numbers I'm sure you've looked at and gone, geez, I didn't expect that. We're talking 12, 13, 14,000 a square meter, aren't we?
It certainly gets up to that. Right. So Marine Parade now is between 10 to 12,000 per square metre. And the northern end of Cottesloe is probably a bit more expensive than the southern end.
And there's a lot of executives, celebrities living up there as well.
Funnily enough, and I suppose a lot of your listeners wouldn't realise this, is that if we still try and search for the most expensive land in Perth, it is actually not in Cottesloe. It's in Swanbourne. Mm. We go down North Street, we hit the roundabout at Marine. Most people go left. All the people who drive their cars and their bikes and everything else on the weekend all want to be seen heading south along Marine Parade, and as you go right onto the roundabout and head north, it's Odone Crescent, and that's become this real dress circle.
Well, we've got Dale Alcock, Michael Chaney, Tim Roberts. These are big guys that live in next door to each other, right?
Yeah, yeah, and there's very few homes. And it's really interesting what, at that level of wealth, what you're looking for and what impacts value, because, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, if you're in the suburbs and you know your house is facing west or south, it's more about just getting a roof over your head and you're not really too concerned about the orientation. But the reason that land, which we're talking, as you said before, up to 14,000 a square metre on Odone Crescent, and there's been sales to back that up in recent years, is that it just goes northwest. So suddenly you're not looking straight at the sun or getting blown into by the southwest breezes. So these are all first world problems.
Yeah, they are. But these are problems that you're thinking about at 14,000 a square metre compared to, let's say, a brand new lot in Henleybrook at 850 a square metre, or a subdivided lot at an Armidale lot, maybe 500 a square metre, Baldivis, around the same prices. We're talking about 20, 25 times the value here. So those things do start to become worthwhile thinking about, don't they?
Yeah, well, when you're putting a bit of lawn down, it's every square metre it's covering is 14,000, then yeah. That does sound quite odd.
Okay, so let's keep going up the coast then.
So Cottesloe and Swanbourne have definitely been the strongest performers through this growth period we've experienced in recent years. City Beach, again, it's very hard to explain what's going on there, in the sense you've got South City Beach, which is like its own suburb, which is probably more aligned to what's going on in Swanbourne and Cottesloe. I actually find City Beach probably the hardest suburb to value because it's all just coastal dunes, a regular block. You could have one property next door to the other. One has a view, the other has no view. You
know, one's got a multi-million dollar building on it. The other one's got an old 60s, 50s property.
Yeah, there's some really out there designs through the 70s. I think most of it was developed through the 60s and 70s. But that's still a consistent market. But it is in that price band where it has stabilised in the last year. It hasn't gone up by 20%.
By stabilise, you mean stagnate.
A lot of these suburbs had all their growth in 2021.
When the affordability factor came in, as the interest rates were so low.
Oh, absolutely. So, well, so
that's where people are stretching, is what you're saying.
There were two reasons. One, definitely the interest rates, but the other is that Perth hadn't done anything for really 10 years. So suddenly you've got cash rate at 0.1%, values back where they were in 2012. It was a perfect storm. So those suburbs had a lot of growth. We're talking 30% during 21.
I've got a mate, for example, who bought for 3 mil, sold for 4 mil 11 months later.
Yeah. So the cash rate started to increase in March 2022. And I think you'd almost push the button then, going, okay, let's have a breather. And that went up to, when was the last interest rate rise, in November 23. A lot of the market in the western suburb, well, we know where we are now. We can go, well, we're coming up to, you know, 5 or 6 months where the next move is probably going to be down. So people can actually work out where they were. So during that period, it stabilized, because you could take out your mortgage one day and the next month you might be paying a higher rate.
$1,000 more a month.
Yeah. Now we've got some certainty. We can push forward and the market can work out where it's at.
Have you seen any sort of step change in the dynamics in the market in the suburbs since November, the last time we saw a cash rate change? If I can give some context, there really has been a step change. The second we got out of Christmas, essentially, across the rest of the market has just gone boom, another 5 to 10% in a number of suburbs. You got double the amount of people back again at the at-home opens than you did simply in the second half of last year. How does the western suburbs characterize in that space?
Yeah, certainly as we discussed before, all the affordable stock, very similar to the outer suburbs. So yeah, as soon as they pressed pause, there were 40, 50 groups going to home opens, property selling in a really short time frame. Higher end, I think it's just allowed it to work out where it's at. And what will happen now is that when interest rates do start to come down, those higher price brackets will probably start to move again. Because at the moment, with it being so high, yeah, we're not really seeing any growth.
So when you talk about the higher price points, that's relative to each suburb you're talking about, right? So a higher price point in Nedlands might be a different number to Swanbourne or Cottesloe.
Definitely. So yeah, somewhere like Nedlands caps out at about 5 million. But again, I've got to be quite careful what I say, in the sense there's been some outrageous sales lately in the absolute top end.
Like the Esplanade, for example.
Well, like the Esplanade, there's a lot which goes on off market, which I can't talk directly about, but I can give indications as to what's going on because of non-disclosure. So these are highly private vendors and purchasers who really don't want this to become public.
But it gets on Landgate eventually though, Cameron.
It does. But what happens there is they're a bit immune from whether interest rates at 2% or 4% or 6%.
And that's what I would have thought. You get to a price point where these people aren't really taking a loan out anymore. So why is it that you start to get above the 3 to 4 mil space in a lot of these suburbs and you really haven't seen a lot of growth in the last 18 months?
I think it's just having the planets aligned. So in that real, real top end, for that buyer to buy that property, every box needs to be ticked. And what they're looking for is a lot different to what a buyer in the outer suburbs is looking for. So, well, if I go through them, like one is the orientation of the property. So you could have a street where one's got a south-facing backyard, one's got a north-facing backyard. If a valuer comes in and goes, oh, well, it's the same land size, it's the same street, it's the same house, why is one sold for $200,000 or $300,000 more than the other? So that has a massive impact. So the orientation of the block, and particularly down in Cottesloe with the views, if you can get a north-facing property with an ocean view, that's going to be worth significantly more than a southwest-facing property with an ocean view. Views, orientation. The other one which has come in the last few years is the garaging aspect of a property. You could spend $5 million on a build, but if you put a two-car carport on that property, you're going to lose a huge share of the market. I've seen basement garages on residential homes in Claremont where it's a 25-car basement garage. Like, this owner has a car collection. Yeah. So when he's going
to look... There's not many places he can buy then if he's got that many cars.
Well, that's true. That's true. And some of these cars I've heard you can't actually insure. If it's some of these really vintage style cars, won't be insured for a carport. They need a full lock-up garage. What I could say is the more garaging, the better. A 10-car garage is where you're going to get a really premium price.
And when you think about the people who are listening to this podcast, people who go all the way from Armidale up to Cottesloe, most people listening to this will think, are you serious, Cameron? A 10-car garage is what I need to be pitching for if I'm building a new home in the western suburbs.
Absolutely. More garaging, the better.
And then the ironic thing is, from a planning point of view, the state government's looking to actually limit the amount of car bays, especially in development.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's true. I think just at that level, and then kids seem to stay at home longer and suddenly go from 4 cars to 6 cars to 8 cars, and they're all expensive cars.
And suddenly cars are being parked on the street if you don't have the amount of car bays you need.
Yeah. Then another big factor is privacy. So again, you could buy your land for $5 million, you could build for $5 million, and you think, well, I've got a $10 million plus property here. But if you've got overshadowing, if you've got another two-story home which looks into your backyard, a lot of buyers won't look at it. So they'll just walk away. There was a property which just sold in Cottesloe recently. I wasn't told the name of the person, but apparently they were a celebrity from the East Coast, and they came down with basically like a professional photographer to stand on the beach at Cottesloe and try and see if they could take photos of that particular person on the balcony. So again, if that privacy isn't there, they'll walk away from the deal. There's just these factors at that level. So if you can get the views and the orientation right, if you can get the floor plan, like they're almost intangibles. If you can get that right, if you can get the privacy right, and if you can get the garaging right, then you get these sales which are, you know, north of $15 million. But if one of those isn't there, you can lose a huge chunk of the market. And when all those planets do align, then magic happens and you get a sale price where, as valuers, we're looking at it going, well, hang on, the land's worth this and the build cost is this, how do we stack this up?
But you can go both ways, is what you're saying. You can easily overcapitalize even if you're in a suburb where price isn't actually a restriction.
Yeah. And then you've got that other factor where these homes can take 3 to 4 years to build. So as a potential purchaser, the premium you're prepared to pay to say, throw me the keys, I'll get a removal truck and I'm done in a couple of weeks, compared to 3 to 4 years. And when you think about it, if you've got a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old and you're sitting down with the architect and you're going, oh, they're going to love that play area and here's the pool, by the time it's finished and you've got a 15 and a 16-year-old, well, suddenly the home you need is completely different to the home you designed. So it's all about having that now and the premium buyers are prepared to pay for that.
When you think about the price points you've seen come through over the last few months, are there any suburbs that you're looking at and you're surprised about the direction they're taking right now, up or down?
It is surprising. If you looked across the western suburbs and went, okay, if you'd bought anywhere from 2015 to the start of COVID 2020, how should have you performed? And I think you said 50% before for the outer areas.
From 2019 to now, most of the property in Perth would have gone up about 50% since 2019.
Yeah, and that would probably be about right for the western suburbs. I was thinking your PAR should be probably 40%. So if you bought $1 million home in 2019, it probably should be 1.4, maybe it should be 1.5. So yeah, you're getting close to 50%. But if we look a bit deeper, I would say the range is 20% to 80%, depending on the property type and the suburb.
Detail that for us.
If I looked at the lowest growth rate, it would probably be in Dalkeith. It's probably done on average more 20 to 30%. And if we look at the top end, again, Cottesloe, and there's been some sales lately which have shown, you know, they've been purchased in 2018 for $5 million and they're selling for $8 or $9 million. So that's sort of getting up to that 80%. I haven't seen anything double. I'm yet to see one property in the western suburbs, even if it's a small unit or a home around $1 million. I've never seen something go from 1 to 2. But if we looked at, say, somewhere like Dalkeith, and why has it underperformed? Because, as we said, PAR's more 40 to 50%.
And it should be a premier suburb. I mean, to this day, we still look at Dalkeith as, on average, being the most expensive suburb. Why is it lagging behind?
I've seen a lot of people sell in Dalkeith and buy into Cottesloe. And you look back and you think, why is that? And I actually think Dalkeith is the most undervalued because it hasn't performed. So as a buying opportunity...
So you think it's primed? You think it's ready for people to start to recognise, well, hey, that gap between Nedlands and Dalkeith or Mosman Park and Dalkeith really shouldn't be this tight?
Yeah, yeah. And given that they used to be fairly similar in value, Cottesloe and Dalkeith, and one's just leapt ahead and the other's been left behind a bit, yeah, we're trying to work out the reasons why. And I was driving down Waratah Avenue earlier today, and I think there's a reason for that which can be explained on Waratah Ave, and that's there's 6 real estate agent offices on Waratah Avenue, and there's probably 2 or 3 cafes. There's no wine bars, and there's no pub. There's not a lot of amenity. If you're looking to sell your house, well, you've got some of the best choices in Perth as far as real estate agents go. But if you want looking as a family to move into the area and you want to walk down the road, there's just not a lot going on. And I think through COVID, you know, everyone who's moved back into the western suburbs is looking for Perth to really mature into that big city. Yeah. Yeah. So the difference between going down to Cottesloe, going down to Marine Parade, the bars, there's people walking, there's people jogging, there's people at the OBH, there's people at the cot.
It's a fun place to be.
There's just a lot going on. I think humans want to see more humans. And Dalkeith, to me, needs the hub to come good.
Do you think it's been a victim of its own doing in that it feels like Dalkeith is a part of the world where it intentionally is out of the way? It likes the fact that no one comes in. It doesn't want many people coming in. And it's not really that inviting a place for people who don't live in Dalkeith in the first place. And maybe that was sought after decades ago as the millionaire's playground. But now people really want to be, as you said, connected. Even if it's connected with like-minded, like-financed people, but they still want to have a town centre.
Definitely. And I think for some buyers, the privacy there is exactly what they're looking for. So Dalkeith is perfect. Like, that is a really private suburb. There's a lot of big gates.
Leafy green, wide blocks, minimal neighbours, very, very beautiful part of the world. Just not that fun.
That's sort of what it's come down to. It's people looking for an active suburb with a lot going on, a lot to do. And that's why how many young people, you know, leave Perth and go, well, why am I leaving? Because I want more. I want Sydney. I want Melbourne.
I want London.
Yeah. I want density. And you go to somewhere like Melbourne and there's a lot going on, but there's no beach. You know, they've done really well with all the sporting events. But I think Perth has a lot more to offer. We just
need to make the most of what we got.
Yeah, definitely. So Dalkeith, it's an interesting one. And I think the other thing which, from the stats, which has held it back is, we spoke about City Beach before, and a lot of the homes were developed in the 60s and 70s, and they've sort of reached the end of their economic life. Where in Dalkeith, you've got a lot of homes built in the 90s, and then these huge mansions where, you know, we weren't worried about energy efficiency and open plan living and, you know, just little factors like being able to see the pool from the kitchen and having, you know, the 6 to 8 car garage. So these are 5-bedroom, 5-bathroom homes with a 2-car garage. Well, I liken it to a mate who used to drive a 1995 Ford Fairlane. It's spacious, it's got a V8, but it's not worth a lot of money.
And it's not fuel efficient at all.
It's not at all. It's not at all. So some of those properties, you can buy a 5-bedroom, 5-bathroom home for low to mid threes.
That's pretty amazing value when you think about the replacement cost of the bricks and mortar of that home. That would cost at least a couple of mil to build, and the land value is far more than that.
Could be looking at a replacement cost of, you know, $2 million and an added value of a quarter of that, simply because, you know, they have become obsolete, some of these homes.
So Dalkeith being the opportunity there, if we can start to get some younger people in, start to get the council to actually enact a vibrancy in that suburb, it's prime, really. I look at that and think the properties in that suburb should all be $1 million more, at least, than what they are. Would you agree?
Potentially, I agree. But at the moment, as you said, it needs that hub to become active. It needs more for younger people to get involved. I mean, Waratah Avenue on a Saturday night, there's not a lot going on. So it would be great to see some wine bars go in and just the community get together and not everyone stay behind closed doors.
As we go up the spectrum there, obviously Nedlands has performed quite well. Cheaper suburb than Dalkeith has performed quite well. I think a lot of it having to do with the development rezoning closer to Stirling Highway, seeing a lot of the growth there. But even the properties between Jenkins and Princess have really gone up, as you said, by about that 50%. We expect to start seeing some activation along Stirling Highway, but it is taking longer than most people would have liked. I think that will start to bring in a lot of that vibrancy, and hopefully Dalkeith will get a bit of splash zone from that, simply driving up those avenues.
Yeah, for sure. And Nedlands is probably at a low point at the moment because it really doesn't have a pub, with the Captain Stirling gone and a few others in previous years. So I think Steve's, you can technically say, is Nedlands. So yeah, there's not a lot going on. Actually, Hampton Road, there is a pub there, but it's not open that often. So,
and north of the highway as well.
Yeah, I think Nedlands is at a bit of a low point, and once the Captain Stirling reopens and all that retail space, Woolworths, Aldi, potentially the Chellingworth site being built on.
I mean, that would change the face of the suburb, wouldn't it? When you get that density of younger people coming in one site, that would support a brand new pub and a couple of shops there, wouldn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, Nedlands has definitely upside. I mean, most suburbs do, but I think some of these suburbs within the West Suburbs need a bit more of an activity centre, definitely.
Unfortunately, the NIMBYism that goes throughout the Western Suburbs has been the thing that's shooting themselves in the foot, in the same way that they're looking to protect their own amenity and have as few people join them as possible. That is the point of NIMBYism. It's actually, in a way, the opposite is what brings values higher these days, with the culture and the demographics of those people actually looking to make the most of that suburb. Young people these days that do have the money, as you said, they're after community, they're after activation, and I think it's going to be those suburbs in the Western Suburbs that actually support that embrace that, just as we have seen through Cottesloe and parts of Mosman Park, parts of Claremont even, that are going to see the most upside in terms of everyone's values.
I think the flow-on effect of what's happening in Cottesloe and Swanbourne, the next best performing areas have been Mosman Park, because the people who missed out on Cottesloe have gone to Mosman Park, people who missed out on Mosman Park have maybe gone to North Fremantle. And these all have some really cool little strips, like Glide Street and Mosman Park. I think that's probably one of the best examples. You've got the apartments, you've got some small wine bars, you've got cafes, and only 3 or 4 years ago, there was nothing going on there at all. So that's probably a really good example.
Well, let's segue into apartments. Obviously, there's been a couple of projects come up in recent years. You've got your packed project Noma on Glide Street. Anyone who goes down Stirling Highway would have seen Paul Blackburn's The Grove, that's just about finished. I certainly would have thought that The Grove, for example, will start to impact having some supply come on the market with a lot of those downsizes, is now ready to make that move finally. Have you seen any value changes in apartments in the Western Suburbs?
Yes, definitely. And it's taken a while. It's actually taken a long time, but the apartments have started to really mature. And the best examples, again, are those ones with amenity. So Claremont Oval, I'd say, has gone up, you know, your $600,000 two-bedroom apartment from 3 or 4 years ago is probably now in the mid-sevens.
Is it a replacement cost thing where the newer stuff is just more expensive and the amenity hasn't really dropped yet?
Well, there's a combination. There was just a huge oversupply during that soft period around 2017 18 19. A lot of developments were actually coming onto the market
at the same time,
yeah, which is pretty hard to believe now given the undersupply. So a lot of that's been absorbed, and then with the downsizers particularly and young professionals coming into the area, they just look at it going, well, you know, I can spend $800,000-$900,000 on a really decent apartment. And it's a pretty good way to live, particularly somewhere, again, like Claremont Oval. Like, you've got your train, and now you can actually wheel your suitcase across to the train station, go to the airport and get a flight anywhere in the world. Like, that's something which Perth has just never had in the past. Mm. Somewhere like Leighton Beach has performed, again, really well. You've got, obviously, the ocean, you've got the train line, you can step into the old part of North Fremantle.
That's recovering from massive drops in values from the boom, isn't it?
Well, when they first came on, it was around that 2009 period where Perth probably overshot the mark. It was a really slow grind. And in recent years, yeah, they've clawed a lot of those losses back. And the ones which actually finished during the downturn of sort of 2017, 2018, their values are significantly higher because people bought off the plan in a pretty depressed market.
As cheap as it could have got, yeah.
Yeah,
construction costs were a lot cheaper and developers were buying land even at discounted prices at that point.
Yeah, and the other examples of really well-performing apartments is, again, in Mosman Park on Glyde Street. And again, you've got
resales in there?
They've performed really strongly. You know, a lot of them are north-facing. You look over the pine trees to Cottesloe. You've got the train line. You walk downstairs. You can go out for a meal. You can go out for a drink. You know, that's what apartment living is all about. The best way I could describe it is whatever apartment is designed to use your car the least, it's almost, that's the best performing development.
That's the best part of an apartment though, isn't it? It's the walk score that people really value. Now, we've spent a long time talking about mansions today, but we haven't really spoken a lot about vacant land. We've spoken about rates per square meter and how they change across the suburbs, but many people knocking a house down, selling a vacant block of land. It's not like there's any land estates that have come up in the western suburbs any time in the last 30 years, but are we seeing any land transactions happening where people are buying that block of land, recognizing the 50% larger cost to build than it was 5 years ago and still getting on with it?
It's a good question. I've seen some blocks of land at the top end, like we're talking $4 million blocks of land in, say, Peppermint Grove, which have just been handballed from one purchaser to the next.
Is this where maybe the Taj on the Swan would have been?
Around there. So basically, you've got your 1,200 square meter block and you bought for $4 million and you're thinking, well, we can put something pretty decent on here for $2.5 million. And you get your architect involved and your builder involved and they come back.
Now it's $4 million.
And it's $4 million. And you're going, that's probably not affordable for us. And so they sell it. So they might have bought that block in 2020 and sold it in 2022. And the movement, you know, has been very minimal.
Because of the increase in the build cost, right? It's that residual land value we're talking about.
Yep. So the worst performing asset in the western suburb has been land. There was a block in Swanbourne recently, which they purchased in, I think it was the start of 22 for high ones, and it sold a month or two ago for slightly under what they bought it for 18 months ago. And
think about the rest of the suburb, that's way out of whack, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I know it probably wasn't an investment property, but if you had to put that money into four homes in Armidale, you'd be up
40-50%.
Yeah. So it hasn't been a great outcome. But again, people get their plans drawn up and they just realise that construction prices are so much higher than what they thought they were.
Do you think that's going to continue to stagnate, given one, the time it takes to build, as you referenced before, and the, I guess, the impatience of a lot of people with that sort of money to just walk into a ready-built home, but two, just simply the cost and it not meeting parity yet? One thing we've noticed around the rest of the state is that we're finally starting to get to a point in the land subdivision suburbs where the established market is finally getting back to the price point of land plus build contract. Now, that works at $700,000. We're starting to see the established market go from $500,000 to $700,000 to match that build house and land price. We're talking $4-5 million. I assume the issue is exactly the same, just different numbers, where the established market was at $3 million. It's now at $4 million. But if you were to do the land and the build, we're still at $5.5-6 million.
Yeah, well, this is the crazy thing. If you can actually take the risk on and go through the process of building, there is a lot of money to be made. Because if you look at what the land's worth and what we call the summation and what the build cost is, buyers are tending to pay a huge premium on top of that, which we have no, as valuers, we haven't seen in recent years.
So what you're saying is in the western suburbs, we've actually met that parity a long time ago. It's just that people don't have the profile to actually bother doing the build. And therefore, because of that, we did meet that parity a long time ago. The established market is actually at $5 million, but the summation of the land plus the build is at $4 million. You'd be stupid not to. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's it. And I suppose what I'm trying to say is that there's still risk and there's still time. There is opportunity. If you can get to the finished product and you have that finished product in today's market, there is a huge premium on top of land cost and build cost. That's not guaranteed in 3 or 4 years. And that's the risk. What we're seeing now is trying to stack up these modern contemporary homes, which tick most of the boxes, is really, really difficult, because I'll look at the build contract in 2019 and it really is amazing to look back. You could build a decent contemporary two-story home for $700,000.
Yeah.
In Cottesloe. The added value on putting on that home in today's market, as in not replacement cost, but what that actually adds as part of the sale price, is at least double that. So suddenly that project, well, not a project home, but a $700,000, you know, medium...
Webb and Brown Neves home.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, is now adding, it might be 10 years old, and it's adding $1.4 million to that block of land.
So, but it maybe costs 1.15, 1.2 to build right now.
Yep.
So yep. there is a premium there. There is an arbitrage. And that is probably the big point if anyone's stuck around to listen to this point in time. That opportunity does exist. If you have the profile, the cash flow to hold out and do a build on a piece of land, build your dream home, you're not going to lose out here as long as the market stays the way it is at the moment. There is an arbitrage to do that. If you're looking at buying in a suburb that is probably undervalued, it looks like a City Beach. It looks like a Dalkeith. These areas maybe should be higher than what they're at the moment.
Yeah, and we're talking large sums of money. And the other layer on top of this is the rental market. So suddenly we're going to be building for 2 years. We need to find a rental. And that rental, which previously was $600 a week, is now $1,200 a week. So, you know, the sums, we're talking significant amounts of money. And the builder might say, yeah, it's an 18-month build. We take out a lease for 18 months. And so many people get to the end of that 18 months and it's like, well, we need to find somewhere to live because our house isn't finished and the landlord wants his property back. There's a lot of risk there. And that's why there is such a premium.
If you think about those people still looking to make a dollar with the sweat equity side of things, there's your opportunity. And I appreciate your time, Cameron. There's not many people in Western Australia who can speak with such breadth and knowledge about the Western suburbs. And I think we should be having you in more than once every couple of years. So thank you very much for coming in. Appreciate your time. You're a very, very busy man. And let's chat Western suburbs again sometime next year.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me, Trent. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Perth Property Show. If you've only just joined the conversation, you can catch up by heading over to our website, perthpropertyshow.com.au, subscribing to the podcast, or joining our Facebook page. Don't forget to tune in next Monday at 7 a.m. for more expert insights, local analysis, and suburb spotlights. Happy hunting!